This is an ABC podcast.
Moree is a town that typifies the ice problem gripping much of regional New South Wales.
A senior drug detective says officers would support on-the-spot fines and cautions for people caught with a small amount of the drug ice.
Used in conjunction with a treatment or education alternative, they would support the broader rollout of SINs to other drug forms.
A senior New South Wales police officer making the case last month for decriminalising drug use and possession. Across Australia and internationally, there's a growing realisation that the way we've traditionally dealt with drug use and possession via the criminal justice system isn't working. And the alternative that is increasingly being suggested is one that is less punitive and emphasises treatment. Hello, I'm Annabelle Quince, and this is Rear Vision on RN. The nation that is frequently held up as the poster child for this kind of drug reform is Portugal. In 2001, Portugal decriminalised the use and possession of all drugs and invested in expanding their drug treatment programs. We're going to look at what led to this reform and what impact it's had on drug use, and we'll compare that with what's happening here in Australia. To understand what led to these reforms, it's important to understand what life was like for the Portuguese during the 50 years the country was ruled by a dictatorship, and what happened when that dictatorship was finally overthrown in 1974. Zoan Goulong is the National Coordinator for Drug Addiction in Portugal.
The drugs problems in Portugal started later than in most European countries. As you probably know, we lived for a long time, for almost 50 years, under a dictatorship, during which we had almost no problems related to drugs. We had a very severe political police, censorship. We were very isolated. It was almost impossible for us to travel abroad. We had no visitors. We were really isolated.
Between 1961 and 1974, Portugal became embroiled in a series of colonial wars in their African colonies. And like the US soldiers in Vietnam, it was here that many young Portuguese encountered drugs.
But during the last years of the regime, we were dealing with a colonial war in our ancient colonies, and almost all our young male population was sent there to serve as soldiers. And down there, drug use, at least cannabis use, was tolerated or even incentivized.
Those wars only came to an end in 1974, when the Portuguese dictatorship was overthrown.
This was May Day in Lisbon, 1 week after the regime of Marcelo Caetano was destroyed in a military coup. An infectiously happy people celebrated the restoration of freedoms taken from them almost 50 years ago.
Suddenly, in 1974, we had our democratic revolution with a huge number of social changes in our society.
A blaring chorus of car horns clashed with the chant, "A united people will never be defeated." Censorship was at an end, freedom of speech restored, elections promised, and most important of all, the end of Portugal's colonial wars in Africa seemed at last to be an attainable goal.
And shortly after, we had the return of the soldiers and settlers from those colonies. We are roughly 10 million inhabitants, and suddenly almost a million people came back to mainland, which caused a lot of perturbation in the society. Those people, of course, they brought their habits, and also they brought tons of cannabis that suddenly was made available for everybody. So there was an explosion of experimentation of something that came with freedom.
Well, it's important to remember that until 1974, Portugal was a fascist dictatorship, and so it had little contact with the outside world, strongly controlled borders, and a very repressive internal policing.
Alex Stevens is Professor of Criminal Justice at the University of Kent.
After the fall of the Salazar dictatorship, there was a lot of social liberalisation and trade liberalisation, and a lot of soldiers came home from the war. So there was a lot of factors that would be likely to increase drug use, and that's what occurred. I'd also remember that there was a high level of poverty and homelessness around the major cities, especially Lisbon, which are factors conducive to the creation of heroin problems.
Shortly after, some criminal organizations came into our territory, making available all the other substances. So suddenly we had plenty of cannabis, but also heroin, cocaine, LSD, you name it. All drugs became available in a completely unprepared society to deal with it. And it spread very, very fast and cross-cutting all social groups. Was not something that happened only among disorganized or marginalized or minorities, but through all social groups, medium class, upper classes, political class, everybody. In just a matter of a decade, it was almost impossible to find a Portuguese family that had no problems related to drugs. And those problems were mostly heroin use that spread very fast and became a true epidemic.
This is Casal Ventosa. They call it the drug supermarket of Lisbon. Here we found pushers and addicts alike doing their deals right in front of the police. Openly on display are tinfoil for smoking heroin and syringes for injecting it.
Here the only way to film was with a secret camera. All so open, so blatant, and seemingly beyond control, until the government came up with a radical solution.
The major concern was about heroin use, and specifically injecting heroin use, because not only were people dying of drug overdoses, there was an increasing level of HIV infection from people sharing needles. And this was a very concerning problem because it was highly visible in the shantytowns around Lisbon and other cities, and it came to such an extent that it spread throughout society. Everyone knew someone in their family or friends who was affected by this problem. So it became a public health crisis and recognised as such, and so the government took action to address that.
By the 90s, mid-90s, we estimate that we could have 100,000 people using heroin in Portugal. That means 1% of our population. We had one of the highest rates of problematic drug use. Dependence, injecting drug use, and so on. HIV infections came along to complicate things. It started to spread among our population, and we had a huge impact of that use.
Now, they've tried the tough-on-drugs approach, and it simply hasn't worked. So now a new experiment where the addict is seen not as a criminal, but a victim.
Throughout the 80s and early 90s, they started to shift towards a more public health response and started to reduce the number of people they were imprisoning for drug use alone. But it wasn't until they had the Commission of Inquiry that produced recommendations for a transformed public health policy and the decriminalisation of 2001 that they introduced a comprehensive approach that led to a reduction in deaths and HIV infections.
You said that commission. Can you tell me what that commission was and what led that to be set up?
It was the public health crisis that was so visible on the streets of Lisbon and other cities that pushed the government of the time to appoint a panel of experts and practitioners in the field who looked around the evidence worldwide and came up with a model that had many recommendations in it about social integration of people who use drugs, about improved treatment services and harm reduction services, and also acknowledging that the criminalisation of people for possession of drugs is a barrier to helping them reintegrate into society and doesn't help anyone.
The government of the day ended up setting up a committee to look at what sorts of responses might be needed and whether there might be a need for policy change.
Caitlin Hughes is an Associate Professor of Criminology and Drug Policy at Flinders University.
And a committee of experts was then established, which include public health professionals and lawyers and a really broad array of experts. And they basically recommended an overhaul of the Portuguese drug policy. They suggested that Portugal needed to decriminalise the use and possession of all illicit drugs, And by decriminalisation, I mean remove the criminal penalties for these particular offences from the criminal code. And alongside that, they recommended expanding investment in treatment, harm reduction, and prevention. And the overall aim was to then shift the way Portugal responded to drugs from a criminal response to a health response. And one of the big rationales was the realisation that the more traditional approach of just criminalising use and possession hadn't been working, and in actual fact had in many cases made the problem worse, because people who were using drugs in more problematic ways were not accessing treatment services due to the stigma that was attached, as well as inadequate service provision. And so Portugal then started to go down the road of a very significant shift towards a public health approach.
The key recommendation was more its philosophy, which was around the social integration of people who use drugs, to try and build social solidarity across the population and not to exclude people and push them to the margins if they happen to be using drugs. So all of the recommendations the panel came up with were designed to promote the social integration of people who have drug problems. So that included public health measures such as increasing opioid substitution treatment in the form of methadone instead of, so people would use prescribed methadone instead of street heroin. And it also included this recommendation to decriminalise the possession of up to 10 days supply of drugs for personal use.
You're listening to Rear Vision on RN with me, Annabelle Quince. In 2001, Portugal formally adopted the recommendation of the expert panel and decriminalised all personal use and possession of drugs. So what did that mean in practical terms, and what happened if a person was apprehended with drugs in Portugal?
Using drugs in Portugal is still prohibited, but it's no longer a crime. I may compare the framework for drug use to the use or not use of the safety belt when you drive. When you do not use the safety belt, the police can still stop you, apply you a fine, or in thesis they may impose that you attend a training course for drivers, but you do not get a criminal record because you are not wearing the safety belt, or you do not end up in jail. With drugs in Portugal nowadays is the same kind of administrative offense. So when someone is intercepted by the police using drugs in a public place or in possession of drugs under the established limit that is calculated on the basis of personal use for 10 days, if you have with you drugs below that threshold, you are not sent to court for a trial, but you are just addressed for an administrative body under the Ministry of Health that evaluates what kind of use do you have, what kind of needs do you have. Are you someone in need of a treatment for the addiction, or are you just an occasional social user? And according with the assessment made, you may be invited to join the adequate responses.
Fernando is sent to one of 18 newly established drug commissions scattered throughout Portugal. Instead of a judge, he faces a panel including a psychologist, a social worker and a doctor. Since last July, addicts like Fernando, caught with less than 10 days' supply, are sent to drug treatment centres. After that, they'll be helped with housing and jobs.
So the drugs would be confiscated, the person would be referred to what's known as a commission for the dissuasion of addiction. So they'd have an appointment to see a panel which would be made up of a social worker, a psychologist and a lawyer, and that group would talk to the person who'd been found on with the drugs on them to find out why they had those drugs, to find out what they knew about the harms of those substances, and to assess whether they had a problem of dependence with drugs. And depending on that conversation, that commission had a variety of options, including referring the person to treatment if they had a drug problem, including fining them if they didn't have a drug problem. But in most cases, the majority of cases led to what's known as a provisional suspension of proceedings, i.e. no sanctions at all.
Along with the decriminalisation, the other critical aspect of change in Portugal was the expansion of the drug treatment programmes.
What Portugal did was they invested a lot more money. Basically, it was about increasing the capacity, but also increasing the types and array of treatments that were on offer. As we know, in many parts of the world, including in Australia, there are often significant shortfalls in the number of treatment places provided. So they sought to both increase the numbers of treatment spots that were provided, but also expand the different types of treatment provided, because good treatment should also be person-centred, and so people have a spectrum of different options to suit their particular needs.
For me, it's a key factor, having enough treatment facilities easily accessible for free, so people can easily access the facilities that they need, either outpatient clinics or inpatient facilities such as therapeutic communities. We have around 1,600 beds available in therapeutic communities, mostly run by NGOs, and the state supports the treatment.
So how successful have these reforms been in decreasing drug use in Portugal?
So post the Portuguese reform, we can see that the prevalence of illicit drug use has remained fairly stable over time. In the years immediately post-reform, there was an increase in lifetime reporting. But the challenge with that is we know lifetime reporting may actually increase merely by removing the stigma around drug use. So when you look at the prevalence of use in the last 12 months, the rates have been fairly constant. There's been slight increases in the more recent times, but that's kind of consistent with broader European trends. I think what's been more important is that we've seen significant reductions in the burden on the criminal justice system, including the police and the courts, as well as the prisons. There's been substantial reductions in drug-related deaths, as well as in rates of infectious disease that are related to drugs. And there's been many more people who have accessed the treatment system. And overall, the social costs associated with the Portuguese approach, even when you take into account the amount of new money that had to be invested, has actually reduced by about 18% over time. So from all accounts, and when you speak to a variety of different stakeholders, whether it's the police or the health stakeholders or the non-government organisations, the Portuguese reform has been deemed a very positive step forward in reducing the harms relating to illicit drug use.
Then just to kind of clarify that, in essence, what they've found in Portugal is it might necessarily decrease the use of illicit drugs, but what it does is it decreases the harm that often goes along with the use of illicit drugs.
That is exactly right.
How does this compare to what's happened in other parts of Europe? If you look at the sort of the general pattern of drug use in Portugal compared to perhaps countries that haven't decriminalised, can you still see significant changes, or what's the kind of comparison like?
The patterns of drug use in Portugal are fairly similar to countries who have or haven't liberalised their policies on drug possession. I've done several studies on this, and overall the evidence suggests that decriminalisation of possession doesn't have much effect either upwards or downwards on rates of drug use. What it does do is enable a public health approach that contacts people, brings them into treatment, and that reduces their risk of death. So, for example, a strong contrast to the Portuguese approach is the approach we currently have in the UK, which continues to be based on criminalisation of people who are in possession of drugs. And in the UK, we have high rising record levels of drug-related deaths that are much higher than we see in Portugal.
I me. Big decision.
In Australia, the story is different and very mixed. There are some states that have decriminalised the use and possession of cannabis. And since the 1990s, there has been an emphasis on diversionary programs. The problem is that the rate and type of diversionary programs differs from state to state.
Australia has traditionally had much higher rates of illicit drug use than Portugal. But in the late 1990s, there was a significant expansion of police diversion programs to provide referral options for people who use or possess small quantities of drugs into educational treatment systems as an alternative to receiving a criminal sanction. But alongside that, three states, South Australia, the ACT, and the Northern Territory, have decriminalised cannabis use and possession, providing people with the option to pay a civil penalty or a fine instead of receiving a criminal conviction. So there's a variety of different approaches that have been employed in Australia.
The way I would describe diversion is any program or policy or approach by which, instead of facing criminal sanctions or court sanctions for a drug use or possession charge, you are diverted out of the criminal justice system in some way or another.
Kate Sear is Associate Professor of Law at Monash University.
All states and territories in Australia have policies and programs offering diversion for people who are detected for drug use or possession offences. But the key point is that those policies and programs differ markedly across different states and territories. So our research showed us that in South Australia, 98% of people who are detected by police for a drug use or drug possession offence are diverted out of the criminal justice system. So they don't go to court, essentially, and don't face a criminal sanction. And South Australia offers the highest rate of diversion of any state or territory in Australia, 98%. And then it's a sliding scale back from there, right down to Western Australia, which has the lowest rate or lowest proportion of offenders with a principal offence of drug use or possession that are offered diversion. Just a little bit over 32% of people in Western Australia are offered diversion, and then all of the other states and territories fall somewhere in between. So very different results depending on where you live. And this is largely due to the fact that in those different states and territories, there are very different approaches, policies, and laws pertaining to when diversion would be offered, in what circumstances, to whom, and for which kinds of drugs.
One of the interesting aspects of what they do in Portugal is, as well as being taken out of the criminal justice system, there seems to have been a very strong emphasis on drug rehabilitation, and certainly places all over Portugal where people either can go or are sent for drug rehabilitation. Have we done anything like that alongside where we have tried to introduce forms of diversion?
We have. I mean, a number of the states and territories in Australia that offer diversion do offer drug treatment or counselling for people. It differs a bit to the way that it works in Portugal, in part because of the way that you are funneled into drug treatment in Portugal. That happens through a dissuasion commission, which is a particular kind of commission formulated under Portuguese law. We don't have something exactly like that here in Australia. But the underlying principle of encouraging or even mandating people who use drugs into drug treatment is something that certainly is in use here in Australia. One of the ways we see it is through diversion programs across some of our states and territories, but we also see it in a couple of other instances. One is where in some states and territories we have drug courts or drug treatment courts, specialised so-called problem-solving courts, where people who have a history of certain kinds of criminal offending are, again, sort of diverted out of the conventional criminal justice system and moved into the drug treatment court setting, where they will go on to a drug treatment order, sometimes for a year or 2 years, where they receive drug treatment and support and counselling, but also drug testing. It's quite an intensive regime or system designed to try and minimise future offending. And although different to the Portuguese system, what it shares with the Portuguese system is an emphasis on drug treatment as one of the solutions to drug use and drug possession offences.
So is there any indication at all, either here or in Portugal, that by decriminalising or diverting people out of the criminal justice system, that we could be actually leading more people into drug use?
When you look across the world, whether you're looking at Portugal or Australia, there are now many different studies that have looked at rates of drug use under liberalised context and non-liberalised context. And we see there's no significant increases in the use of illicit drugs under more liberalised context. But as I noted in the Portuguese example, but also in Australia, what you do see is that there can be significant reductions in drug-related harms. And that's harms that pertain to health, but also social harms. Things like people's ties with their loved ones, people's employment prospects, and people's general relationships and sort of trust or willingness to work with police or report crimes. Many years ago, there was a lot of concern that this types of reform might send the wrong message. But we now have significant amounts of research showing that it's a fairly pragmatic, humanistic response that can be an important step forward. I think it's also important to note that internationally, there has been a recent call by 31 United Nations bodies calling on all member states to be expanding the provision of alternatives to arrest for use and possession, including through decriminalisation. So when the UN bodies are calling for these sorts of changes, something that they're unlikely to do unless there's very good evidence, I think there really is a much more appetite for reform.
The Special Commission of Inquiry into the Drug ICE...
The Special Commission of Inquiry holding hearings in East Maitland has been told the drug ICE is getting cheaper and easier to access. Cessnock-based fax manager...
Do you think the political will exists at either the state or the federal level to follow a kind of Portuguese model?
I think when you look across Australia, you see a lot of different discussions about these issues occurring. The New South Wales ICE inquiry is one of the clearest indication of this. Over the last 12, 18 months, they've been discussing many different issues, such as the need to expand investment in treatment, expand our harm reduction responses, and they had a recent roundtable looking at the decriminalisation of amphetamine-type substances. So I think there is a real appetite. One noted person at the recent decriminalisation roundtable was the former police commissioner of New South Wales Police, Andrew Scipione. And he was one of the key people who was arguing we do need to be changing some of what we're doing, because we realise that providing people who use or possess drugs with a criminal record is disproportionate and it's contributing to many other harms. And that providing a more health or social response would actually be much more humane, but ultimately more effective.
Caitlin Hughes, Associate Professor of Criminology and Drug Policy at Flinders University. My other guests, Kate Sear, Associate Professor of Law at Monash University. Alex Stevens, Professor of Criminal Justice at the University of Kent. And Zuan Gulong, National Coordinator for Drug Addiction in Portugal. The sound engineer is John Jacobs. I'm Annabelle Quince, and this is Rear Vision on RN.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.